I could go back to my town.
Hey, just the son I wanted to see.
Hello, everybody. Huber and I have been on a long journey with Life is Strange and Life is Strange 2, and today we have to welcome the developers. You want to introduce yourself real quick?
Hi, thank you for having us here. So my name is Michel Corr, and I'm one of the two creative directors of Life is Strange 2, and before on Life is Strange and The Awesome Adventure of Captain Spirit.
And hi, guys. I'm Jean-Luc Cano, and I'm the writer of Life is Strange, Captain Spirit, and Life is Strange 2.
Great. And just in case you're just hopping in this and you're curious about Life is Strange 2, get away. Yeah. We're going to have all the spoilers on the table. Yeah.
Okay, so it's spoiler free.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, no, we're going to talk about everything.
Okay. Awesome.
Yeah.
Spoilers are on the table.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, yeah. So if you haven't played the game yet, go play the game, then come back and watch this.
Mushroom dies at episode 2.
So we can talk to you and ask you about anything as far as what's already been released. But, I think, first of all, Huber, I want to talk about your experience, because I think you probably have the most personal experience of this game for anybody.
Yeah, to start off on a somber note, my brother passed away this year.
Oh, so, sorry about that.
Sorry about that.
So I just want to thank you guys from the bottom of my heart, like, capturing the brotherhood of Daniel and Sean. From where I started the game to where I ended it, I really felt that bond, and sometimes were really hard and rough, but in the end, like, that is an experience I'll never forget. And I'd want to thank you guys.
Thank you. thank you for your time.
Yeah, thank you for sharing this personal story. And it's cool if at a point, when you make a game, we try to, of course, to tell a story, to create something that we care about. But it's also really important that when you create a game, it reaches people, it works for people. So hearing something like you said, it's really some of the best proof of that we should continue to try to do this work.
So many of those moments just, you can relate to. When did you know you were going to leave Max behind and, tackle new characters?
I think it's it came, at the end of the first Life is Strange.
I think that even knowing that we would leave her behind was even when we started to write even the first game, because it was still a big story when we knew that it was this ending. Okay.
Yeah. That's it. The first Life is Strange was meant to be a standalone game, and we didn't imagine it as a series, But because of its success, commercial and with the huge community of fans, Enix, our publisher, asked us to do a sequel. So with Michel and Raoul, the other game director, we sat and we said, okay, what is Life is Strange? Not as a single game, but as a series. What are the pillars of Life is Strange? Is it Max and Chloe? Is it Arcadia Bay? And we figured out that it was more like general stuff, no more like relatable character. We want to talk about social themes or maybe political issues. And on the top of that, a supernatural stuff to make a big metaphor of the theme of the game, of what we want to say.
And especially also just to the characters that are anchored in reality that you can really relate to. And we thought that it was interesting that we would use different characters in each of the games we create in the franchise, just to also try to present all of different sort of portrayal of the people around us. Mm. So,
And yes, the story of Max was directly linked to the power of rewind. So once we told the story of Max and the power of her rewinding the time, we had to find for another story another power. So it was the very beginning of the game, and we had our very first meeting on Life is Strange 2 the 1st December of 2015. So it'd been four years. From the first meeting
long time
to the
ago.
Release of the last episode.
I guess with that, I think another kind of big difference is in the first game, like, not only do you have a very different power that has a very different, like, kind of sci-fi set of, like, questions of, like, what happens when you do this or that, but I think what's really fascinating with 2 is that's not your power.
Yeah.
You don't have direct control over that. So what kind of went into thinking about you're actually influencing somebody else rather than doing it yourself?
Like Jean-Luc said, the Rewan power was the power of the first game. And the way we see a Life is Strange game or a story for those games is not really to think about the power first. It's really to think about the thematics of the story, the themes, the characters, what will be the big idea behind the journey, behind the story. So in the first game, it was a coming of age story, trying to talk about what exactly is a choice in a way, like choice and consequences when Max is a shy teenager who has a lot of issues to go forward in her life. So it was a lot of questions about, should I try to have a perfect life? Should I hesitate all the time before and not wanting to go forward? Or should I just at a point make a decision and live with it? So giving the rewind power to Max was really making her journey much more difficult because she can always try a lot of different consequences, go back and hesitate and not want to advance. So it was thematically working with the story of the game. For the second game, we are dealing with about those two brothers, about family, and about the big themes of education. So we thought that it was really important, interesting, that since you play the big brother and you're thinking all the time about the choice we'll make that will shape Daniel, it would be really interesting that it would be Daniel who has this power, because basically you are controlling the guy who is teaching the guy who has the power. So it's, you're still controlling the power in a way, but with this idea of education anchored in the gameplay itself of how this power works. And as a secondary subtext, it was interesting also that this story of Life is Strange 2 talks a lot about people who are powerless against the institutions, against the world, against the systemic oppression around them. So having your main character be powerless was also resonating with this big idea of everything that's happening around us.
Yeah, there were many times when Max's power could have come in handy.
Yeah.
That's for sure. How much of 2 was outlined ahead of time? Do you do it kind of episode by episode, or do you chart the whole journey out, and then do you make any changes along the way?
You know, the basically our process is to write the main story first. Mm-hmm. And because we knew that Life is Strange 2 will also be an episodic game, we wrote it as an episodic game, and with endings and cliffhanger at the endings, a main themes in each episode, and a big story on the top of that. So it was written from the beginning like this. And the fact that we are working episodically, episode by episode, allowed us to make some small changes, but not big ones, because the story is really is barely the same from the first draft to the end. We make some slight adjustment. For example, in the first draft, the flashback in Seattle in the beginning of episode 3 was originally in the beginning of episode 4, when Sean is in the coma, you know?
Yeah.
After the tragic event at the end of episode 3, we wanted to begin the episode 4 with a flashback in Seattle where everything was cool and everything was nice, and then Sean wakes up at the hospital. But we thought, while we were working on episode 2, we begin to work on episode 3, that the fact that Daniel will be more rebellious in episode 3 will resonate with a flashback in the beginning to show that everything was, what was the balance between the two brothers when they were at Seattle. We've shown maybe more protective and care of Daniel, and also a little bad big brother, and to show the difference between now in episode 3, Daniel is a more big mouth boy, and Sean is wants to keep him with him, but Daniel is more independent. So that's why we changed this.
Yeah, and about the fact that we also are able to look at the feedbacks from the press, from the players, and sometimes slightly adjust things. I don't think we did that a lot in this season, but for sure, anyway, we are still getting everything. So I guess, you know, when episode 1 is released, we are writing episodes 3 and 4. So I'm pretty sure that it also shaped in a way some slight changes or slight adjustment in the writing and in the bigger story. But on the opposite, it's also important to sometimes to not change too much your story based on the feedbacks. I mean, we have had some feedbacks on the first episode that the game was maybe too political some people had some issue with that, but definitely that's still something that was important in our story. So we tried to not take into account too much and be too much moved away from the big goal of what was the story of this game.
Yeah, and I've noticed that episodic releases are kind of divisive. You know, people are either into it or they want to wait for the entire thing to come out. Do you have any thoughts on that? Do you prefer working on just one episode at a time and releasing that one at a time? Or?
I think that working on an episodic game is really complicated. Yes. So for sure, it's I would say it's not by just by will that we decide that it's episodic, because it's really hard. It's like making six games, because we have also Captain Spirit. Yeah. So it's making six small games back to back with no downtime between each of those games. But on the and you're right that it also might be divisive with the players, especially with Life is Strange 2. The game took longer to create than we anticipated at the beginning, so that's why also we had a bit of longer wait between episodes, which definitely was longer than what we would have wanted for the best experience, I would say. But I have, for me, there is no good or bad way to play an episodic game. I mean, if players want to binge everything when it's released, I think it's perfectly fine. And I think that for us, what was interesting for this game with having a wait between the episodes was that the game takes place over 1 year, and there is some pauses between episodes where Sean and Daniel are, so you can read on the diary on the beginning of each episode what happened.
Yeah. Love that stuff.
Awesome, thank you. So it was interesting for us that at least there was a small pause between you play two episodes. That's still for us a way that the story works even better. So you can just give a bit of rest to what happened and let what's happening behind the scene to Sean and Daniel happen. But yeah, for sure the wait was a bit too long, and yeah, could have been better with a shorter time between episodes.
How do you kind of make those decisions of when to let the player make a decision versus something being thrust upon them? Because in a way, it's like the whole story doesn't work if you don't run from the cops, right? You know, and it's similarly, like, if you don't steal that car, like, you kind of have to have those moments.
Exactly.
Yeah.
We know, as I told you before, the main story is written from the beginning, and we know that the player must cross some path in the way. So, for example, in episode one, we know that we had the Seattle scene. After that, the scene in the woods. After that, the station, the gas station, the driving with Brody, and the motel. We know that these blocks won't move, but we can make some different way or different paths to go there and to change. And these sideways will change your perception of the game and will change the way that your playthrough will be different of your playthrough.
But that's a really good question, because it's always we are making a game with a budget, with the constraints, and anyway, there is always this. We want to give the player the sense that he has a lot of agency over the story, but in the end, it's still a game where we scripted most of the paths, and he is stuck into within what we decided. So it's a big balance and a lot of questions to just decide what are the choices that the player would really like to do, and what are the moments where we hope that the player will be okay and accept that the character does that, even if he doesn't have the choice to decide. For the real beginning, I think it works, because when you start the game, you are not Sean. You start to play as Sean, and Sean has 16 years of background behind him. That's clearly not the player choice at all. So having Sean run from the police at this moment, we think that makes sense, considering his background, considering the racial tension that's happening at this moment, considering everything that Sean knows and has been told by his father, has seen on the news and everything. So I guess it works in a way that he thinks that's clearly a bad decision, but he thinks that it's the only way. He should just run away because he will be in trouble. There is other moments in the game where definitely I wish that we could have let more agency, but it's always a balance of, again, the production and so deciding where in the game we need to put the money to basically create a lot of branches versus where it's okay to just have the player go where we decide.
And yeah, there is also the fact that if you are making two big different branches, you know that some of the player will play one and other side play the other, and you will it will be a bit disappointed to put the money in two big different stuff instead of making one big stuff with little little branches. For example, in episode 3, you know, we had the moment that you can cut the weed, and in the beginning, in the first draft of the script, yeah. we imagine we can choose the job you wanted to do. So you had a decision with Sean: go with Cassidy to cut some weed, or go with Finn to
repair some stuff in the barn. Or I don't. Yeah.
In as Michel said, we work with a budget, with constraints, and making these two different big branches. To basically for us choose between Finn or Cassidy, which one you want to spend the afternoon, will be too expensive for this stuff.
And so, yeah, for this scene, what we ended up doing is that we had this moment with Cassidy when you cut the weed, and then we added this longer dialogue with Finn when you get out of the truck. So you still add the possibility to see the two characters, to talk with them, and to make some difference. Instead of choosing in the beginning, okay, I go work with Cassidy or I go work with Finn, and then having two completely different scenes that would be expensive, and you just have one or the other.
That is so insightful, because I'm guilty of it too. I don't always think of budgets and restraints.
That's not your job. As a player, you don't have to think about it. But
let you guys sweat over that. Did the story or the idea come first of kind of this road trip vibe? You know, every episode is so different, whereas Life is Strange 1, we really got to breathe in Arcadia Bay and kind of live in this space. What kind of came first, and was it always the intention to kind of have really different episodes?
It was kind of conscious choice, right, since the beginning, to try to really change the structure a lot. Mm. I mean, we love the small town mystery setting that we had in the first game. Definitely, we are huge fan of TV shows like Twin Peaks. Definitely, it's something that we like. But we also fear that if we did that again, we would definitely start to redo some of the same habits. Like, you would create some characters, some who have secrets. There is a lot of archetypes in this kind of story that we explored in the first game, and we thought that it was a good time to try to do something way different, to make sure that we were not saying the same ideas and creating the same characters again just right after this game. And I think that the road trip structure worked really well with our the various themes that we wanted to tell with this season. So education is the main theme. Education and family are the main themes. And so it could have worked without the road trip. I mean, just having Sean and Daniel, but definitely robbing Sean of everything he owns. Like, he's a 16 teenager, and he just lose everything. He cannot be a kid anymore, and he has to be the substitute father. So putting them on the road, just moving always, it creates a lot of a lot of stakes to this story. Just you have to protect Daniel, to be on the run, to hide, to find shelter and food. So it brings a lot of urgency and forces the player and Sean to teach and educate Daniel way faster than what would happen in a normal life, for sure.
What is it like coming up with some of those choices where you're really trying to get into somebody's head? Like, I think specifically of like with Lila, we had opposite choices there, and you know, like just this thing that's like weighing the risk of, you know, do I call her versus, you know, that relationship, which is clearly very important, but also sort of new to the player.
Yeah, we try to when you are working on a game with choices, if the choice is obvious, you don't have the challenge, you know. But if you don't really know the consequence of something, it's like in real life, you know. You can do some things. Okay, I didn't plan the way it went, and it's something like we want to do with Life is Strange 2 with more long term consequences than the first Life is Strange. Well, because of the rewind mechanic, we have to show the immediate consequence that the player can rewind and try something else. In Life is Strange 2, because of the education of Daniel and the stuff we wanted to tell with this story, we need to have more subtle consequence and not too obvious. So in every choice, we try to imagine what can be the next and the consequence of this.
And what's important also, what we try to do when we design choices, it's try at least to think about what what the player would like to have as an option. I mean, we cannot, again, we cannot give every options, but we are doing also a lot of playtests, and with all the team and the designers, we have a lot of feedbacks on the choices. And what is important for us is that for sure that if there is a choice and there is an obvious answer that everybody wants to tell, we should have it in the game, mostly for the dialogues. But so that's the balance where, that's why also we are not really looking to have a 50% balance on choices. I mean, there are choices that might, if the player want to be able to say something, I mean, we should also give the option. There is an example is in episode 2 after the death of Mushroom. So Sean is asking the question if Mushroom is in heaven or not. So we know that most of the players will answer yes, based on diverse reasons, because of phase, but also based on just they don't want to say no and hurt Daniel as an answer. But we also really wanted to have the option to be able to say no, there is no heaven. She's dead somewhere, we don't know where she is. Because some players would like to be able to answer that and wouldn't like to be forced to have an answer where they use religion. Mm-hmm. So yeah, sometimes it's important to just think of the choice about what also the player would like to have as an option.
Yeah, actually, kind of comes to one of my questions, kind of about both games, is because, you know, I'm a strong person of faith, and like I volunteered my church for like 20 years, and I felt like the portrayal of religion in both games has been pretty respectful and not caricatured, and so it's like I can like really feel like I can relate to these people. There are things in there that are like, oh, I wouldn't have even thought that most people making a video game would even be familiar with these things, and just like the choices with the grandparents to like pray.
Yeah,
or
it
not.
It was the same idea. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Thank you. It's you know, it's complicated to in those games to make sure that we are respectful to most of the players and of the different, there is so many different opinions in each of one of us. So I'm pretty sure that we cannot please to everybody, but the idea is still to try to be as much as respectful as possible, to never show anything in a black or white way, but start mostly try to show the shades of gray in every people and every choices and every situation.
Yeah, because our role, we think, or as creator of video games, is not to give our point of view on stuff. It's not to say religion is good or religion is bad or this is good or this. Obviously, there are some bad stuffs. We are all agree with that. But what we want to do is to put the player in front of situation and let him think by himself. You know, for example. If you in the first season of Life is Strange, when we talk about euthanasia with the Chloe stuff, we don't want to share our point of view that to say euthanasia is good or euthanasia is bad. It's just, this is the situation. Do as your heart feel. And maybe it will change your mind if you were against euthanasia. And because of your relationship with Chloe, you want to do this to her. It will maybe change your own opinion, or maybe not, but that's okay.
Or maybe it will change your opinion if you were for it. Exactly. And now you realize how attached you are to Chloe, maybe you don't. Yeah.
And we're really taking care of not be too pushy in one direction and to let the player do his own opinion on stuff.
Yeah, so in episode 1 and 5, we get some insight into Life is Strange 1. Mm-hmm. How did all that come to be? Did you always want to check in kind of on Life is Strange 1?
Yeah.
Or, what was kind of just the process of that? Was that always in the background?
No, I think we knew from the beginning that Life is Strange 2 and Life is Strange will be linked because it's the same universe. Mm-hmm. The story of Life is Strange 2 takes place 3 years after the event of the first. So we wanted to have some bounds between the two games. But we also didn't want to be too fan service stuff, you know? We didn't want to bring back Max and Chloe only to please fan. But we wanted also to give some news about them because we really loved Max and Chloe. And even for us, it was hard to leave them behind when we created Life is Strange 2. But we also, we wanted from the beginning to create stuff from, and you know, for example, in the first episode, as you mentioned, the fact that you can have Arcadia Bay destroyed or fine. What we wanted to show in this scene is to also tell the player in a metaphoric or symbolic way, this is the past. Even if we love this town, this is the past. Now, look, this is Daniel, this is your future. It was a metaphor to say, even if you love the first Life is Strange, and we deeply loved our first game, we need to move on and try something else.
Yeah, that choice at the end of Life is Strange 1, I'm still mad at you guys for that.
But yeah, it was Elise, right? She made the other choice. And so it's interesting to, because we had a friend who we used to work with, you know, she made the opposite choice that we did. And so it's interesting.
In both games.
Yeah. And it was interesting.
That's
interesting.
That's cool.
Yeah.
How that impacted David's story.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was, we really wanted to bring back David. We knew when we started to write the story and when we had decided to bring back David as a character, we knew that it was maybe not the character that the player base wanted to see.
I didn't recognize him. I didn't know until like many, many minutes later. I was like, who is this?
It was decided to try to slightly make you say that, is it him? Oh, yeah, it's him. But we thought that he was an interesting character to bring back at first because he's one of the only characters that is alive in both situations. I mean, if you sacrificed Arcadia Bay, he's alive because he was in the bunker in the dark room arresting Jefferson at the same moment. And if you sacrifice Chloe, of course, he's alive because there is no tornado. So it was easy, and again, for production issue, to have him in both cases and not deciding to have one character and another one on both playthroughs. And we also wanted to show a bit more of his redemption. I think it was a character that was deeply flawed in the first game. He showed a lot of almost of abuse with Chloe, and he was starting to show a bit of remorse at the end of the third Life is Strange. But it was interesting to show that with time and he has this self introspection and could agree and vocalize in season two that he did some bad things that he knows that he fucked up, and he tried to reconciliate, to apologize to Chloe and everything. And on the opposite, showing that when she's alive, Chloe forgave him. We saw that it was an interesting way, in a really small way, to show that Chloe is okay 3 years later, that she's moved on with her life with Max, and that she's also made peace with a lot of things, even in a way that she could forgive David.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Well, you talked about, you know, the relationship with Daniel and the education of Daniel being like one of the big things. What was it like actually like implementing that? Is there like a meter under the hood? Essentially a good or bad meter?
Yeah.
Two of three.
That first lockbox in episode one, the forest, like breaking it open, there's no money in there.
Yeah, it still shows that stealing could be okay. Yeah, because he looks at it. We internally we call those meter the morality meter and the brotherhood meter. Even if for us it's not really morality in a way that there is no good or bad moral choice. It's more about respecting the rules of society versus thinking about the rules to not the rules, but thinking about your own benefits, or just it's more complying to the rule of society versus thinking about Sean and Daniel first. And so most of the situations around Daniel are changing one or both of those meters. And so the meters about the rules of society versus your own benefits is definitely what decides at the end if Daniel agrees or not with your final choice. And it works with a lot of choices before, like in the police station, there is a lot of moments where Daniel can agree or refuse. Even at the end of episode 4, what's happening with Lisbeth is based on this meter.
For example, one scene, remember in the episode 1, when you find the car when you are into the woods, you can steal the Choco Crisp and give it to Daniel. And for example, this scene, if you steal the Choco Crisp to give it to Daniel, his brotherhood will be, it's 1 point, for example, of brotherhood, but less points into morality because you show him that society, that stealing is good. So it's not accepted.
It's okay.
So it's okay to steal if you're angry. So basically, the decision you are going to do for Daniel, will move these two parameters.
Yeah, it's not always the case that something that lower the morality meter makes the brotherhood meter higher. But there were, it was there is a lot of questions when we do things like that, because it's, of course, our personal view about things. So we have a lot of debates with the designers when we work on a scene to say, okay, look at every dialogues and every actions we have in this scene. Where do we put points? Where do we remove points? Where do we just don't do anything? And I think in the end, we are quite happy with what we did, but it's still, of course, up for debate. I mean, I'm pretty sure that there is some people who will see that something that where we decided to put a point, they wouldn't have put it. But yeah, I mean, that's always how it works when you create something. It's still a bit of, I don't know the word in English.
Michel? French time.
Yeah.
Vas-y, dis-moi, Michel. Quel est le mot que tu cherches?
Je ne sais même plus en français. Quand tu es subjective. Yeah, it's more subjective. It's more subjective than objective sometimes. Yeah.
Got it. Captain Spirit was such a great character and, you know, a impactful part of this story. Did you come up with the standalone game beforehand, or did you was he always going to be a part of Life is Strange 2 and then you wanted to tell more and then you did?
Good. Thanks for asking about Captain Spirit.
Yes, we deeply love this game, and the game is free. So you
free.
Can
first it's
so
free.
First, so you can play it on PlayStation Network and download it, because we are
and
a little
Steam,
bit sad and on everything, and we are a little bit sad because not a lot of people have played Captain Spirit, and we deeply love this game. So to answer to your question, we had the world story of the Life is Strange 2 written, and we thought with Square Enix, our publisher, that it would be nice to make a small game, you know, to help people not to forget Max and Quay, but to dig into our new universe. So we thought about it with Michel and Raoul, and also with our publisher. Our first idea was maybe to make a game about Cassidy, for example. What about Cassidy? We thought about other character, but in the end, we chose Captain Spirit because we knew that in Life is Strange 2, you will have to take care about a 9-year-old kid. And making a game while make you play a 9-year-old kid can make you think about differently when you play as Sean. So that's how the story of Captain Spirit began.
It was also really, really interesting with the theme of the season 2, because so in season 2 you have Daniel, who is a kid who just wants to be a normal kid who has those superpowers, and Chris is completely the opposite. He's a kid who doesn't have any power, who would love to be a superhero. So it was an interesting contrast and parallel between the two characters.
Get into that house in episode 3. I was like, wait.
Yeah.
Oh. I remember that moment. That was cool.
One of the things that the games do that is really very different than most games, even many narrative games, is you really have this chance to like breathe and take in an area and look at all of these details and just those moments when you just sit and let the music play. Talk about, you know, kind of your thought on pacing and developing those kinds of moments.
I think that's something we already had a lot in the first game. It was really important for us. I think when we worked on the first Life is Strange and we decided that we would have all those moments, I think it's something most of the games and are really fast paced. And I mean, not only games, but overall, we're in a world and society where we don't take much time for anything. We just sometimes just don't think about things, or everything is really stressed out and we are always quick and speed. And so just in a game, showing that you can also have moments where you just think about yourself, take your time, enjoy the scenery, reflect about what's happening, about what you're thinking, about your emotions, it was important to show that slowness in a way, that chilling out is something that's cool, that's great, and we didn't want the game to be all fast-paced, and we just wanted to have that. And you're right, you talk about the music. I think it's also some great moments where we can also somehow reward the player for taking his time just by having this new music, those new camera angles where you can see more of the environments, those new thoughts from the player character. We really wanted to continue to have those moments in the second game, but we slightly upgraded them because you have Daniel with you.
You have Daniel, yeah. And in the first Life is Strange, when we call internally the second the Zen sequence. So let's put a Zen sequence here, a Zen sequence there. And in Life is Strange 2, when you are starting a Zen sequence, most of the time you have Daniel around you, say, okay, come play with me. And so yeah, we wanted to have this this small adjustment to fit in this game.
Yeah, there is moments. Or there is one in. I'm not sure that many players saw this in Captain Spirit, but in Captain Spirit, if you go and sit on the couch while your dad is watching the game. If you wait a long time,
oh, I don't know if I did.
Yeah, it's a long time. I think it's maybe too long. I'm not sure that much players saw that, but it's like 30 or 40 seconds, so it's long. After 40 seconds, you have Charles, your father, who starts to notice that you're here, and he talks to you, and there is a big dialogue basically with him. That's interesting. We really wanted to push this time, this waiting time, quite long, because we wanted to show that Charles has a hard time to connect with his son, so it took time to have the connection, but I don't know if any players saw this dialogue. So maybe you could just replay Captain Spirit and go on the couch and wait a long time.
Yeah, I know. I'm actually, after I finished two, I wanted to go back and just play them all. So yeah. I know you guys didn't do Before the Storm, but I'm streaming Before the Storm, and I'm going to go through one. I just want to go through it all.
Oh, yeah, to play everything.
Yeah. Were there any big problems, massive problems in development that you can share, or anything to do with like getting into trouble with the choices? Maybe they weren't kind of syncing up, because it just seems like so many ways this thing can go.
For sure, the development of the second season of Life is Strange 2 has been more difficult than the first one, because as Michel said, we didn't expect this amount of work. You know, in the first Life is Strange, all the game was set in Arcadia Bay with basically the same character, episode by episode. In Life is Strange 2, regarding to the structure of the road trip, we have for every episode new location, new props, new designs, new characters. So it was basically making a new game in every episode. So it was sometimes pretty hard, and we have to cut some of certain sequence we had in mind to fit into the our production constraints. We had to make a big motion capture shootings because we had a lot of stuff to put into every episode. So yeah, it was more hardcore.
I wouldn't say big problem, but something that's been complicated, but that's also why we make those games complicating over the course of the whole season, is just, I would say, to be realistic and with the situations we are talking about. I mean, it's a game. The first game we had, we were ourselves, of course, teenagers in high school, so there were part of ourselves that we would put at least somehow in the first game. And the first game was also heavily anchored in pop culture. So we have, I would say, a lot of references with movies, with TV shows. With this game, I think it's a story that's much more new for us. Definitely, we're white guys with facing no issues at all in our life. So it's really talking about subjects that, in a way, we aren't sometimes even sure that we were allowed to talk about those characters and to talk about the life of those characters that are not us and that we are definitely not facing those issues. So it was a big pressure to make sure that we were doing it the right way, that we were respectful to those people, to those issues, to everything they're facing that we are not. So it was we traveled a lot in the United States. We met a lot of people on the road. We shared their stories, their struggles, and we tried our best to find a way to somehow to give a voice to people that are not often heard enough in video games. But it was a big pressure, and we were always unsure it was done the right way, and we're still not completely unsure, because even if you document yourself a lot, when you're not the person facing an issue, you never know exactly how it is.
Totally. The episode 3, I believe it was, when you escape as Sean, and then you get confronted by those two people out in the...
Episode 4.
4, yeah. You get confronted out there. You know, you're talking about just being a white person that doesn't really face those issues.
Sure.
And just being in that position, you know, it really, really made me think, and it really made me sad. And just, I was thinking about all these things. So that moment was definitely a highlight.
Yeah, as Michel said, we tried to be the more humble and respectful, because what we are portraying in video game most of the time that happen in real life for certain people. And we didn't want to be disrespectful by making games about some tragic events some people are facing only for entertainment. We wanted to be really accurate and to show how bad it is and how sometimes awful experience can be. And we that's why we document ourselves a lot. We read a lot of testimonies and read a lot of blogs and stuff like this to try to be as accurate as possible.
Yeah, the fact that his friend, you could kind of see that his friend wasn't fully into it, but you know, he wasn't going to say anything and he was just going along with his friend.
Yeah.
That whole scenario was...
When you know that it does, he's uncomfortable with it, but in the end, it just doesn't do nothing. Yeah. So, yeah.
And even when we were shooting the motion capture, because Michel, Raoul, and I are also director of the motion capture, even on the set with the actors playing Sean and Chad and Mike, when we saw the first shots, it was it will be hard. It will be a tough scene. You know?
It was a complicated scene. Even after we had the motion capture to write the final dialogues and to decide where we would be giving a choice to the player, how we would edit the scene, and what kind of branches and choices we would make. But yeah, I think in the end it's quite a powerful scene. But it's definitely a scene that we were uncomfortable with a lot and asking ourselves. Even until up until the end, if it was right to, if it was the right way to do this scene, or if it was,
I'm thinking while we are talking to this scene, another changing we've made from the first draft to this scene. Originally, you were encounter Chad and Mike, and after that you have the dream with Esteban in the car.
Yeah, yeah.
And we decided to change it to have the listen with Esteban. And after the encounter of the guy to have the we thought it worked better in this way.
It hit really hard for sure.
What is the challenge, you know, with sort of creating a quote unquote villain in these instances? Because so much of what you're trying to do is you're trying to show multiple perspectives, but then when you're dealing with somebody getting in your face like that, you don't know their motivation, right?
Sure. But to be honest, there is always a motivation. There is always some. Maybe Chad and Mike had been raised like this, and why their parents raised them like this, because they suffer from something. I'm deeply convinced that you are not born bad. Mm-hmm. You became bad because of a lot of things. And even if they are bad racist guy, I don't want to excuse what they are doing. It's awful. But you are always a motivation, which is bad, but there is always something to motivate a gesture.
Nice. Yeah.
So where are you guys going from here? What's coming up next? Whether it's for Life is Strange or something completely different, or
so yeah, we almost just finished working on episode 5. Like it was like a few weeks ago, even with the debug and the patch and everything. So just take a bit of rest. And then what's for sure is that we know that we want to continue to work together and with Raoul, the other director, and continue to make, I would say, story-heavy games. And yeah, we'll have to see also with Square Enix, a publisher who they own the Life is Strange franchise. So it will be up to them also, and we'll see with them what happens. So yeah, who knows?
Yeah, I just want to say again, thank you guys so much for, you know, I was like, Life is Strange 1 hit me so hard, but not as hard as 2 because of just the brother dynamic. Yeah. So
thank you for sharing this, and thank you for your time.
Thank you.
It was awesome for us.
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
It was a pleasure.
Thank you everyone for watching.
Bye bye.
Thank you
for watching.
Daniel. Oh my God.